Welcome, everyone. My name is Muhi Khwaja at American Muslim Community Foundation. And today on the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast, we have on Melinda Tuan, Managing Director at the Fund for Shared Insight. Welcome so much, Melinda.
Thanks so much for having me, Muhi.
Of course. So let our listeners know a little bit more about yourself, where you grew up, where you currently live, all the details you'd like to share.
Sure. I'm an island girl, was born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii, spent my first 18 years of life primarily on the island, and then moved to Boston, where I attended Harvard, majored in urban poverty and homelessness, did the first study of family homelessness in the islands as my senior thesis, worked in Boston for a number of years in for-profit consulting, nonprofit management, did my MBA at Stanford, and then ran a social venture fund in San Francisco called the Roberts Enterprise Development Fund, moved to Philadelphia in 2003, which is where I live now, just outside the city, and have been doing this work of independent consulting and philanthropy for the past 17 years. And seven of those years have been with Fund for Shared Insight as their managing director.
Wow. That is so interesting and amazing, and I love all the different things that you've done along the way. We'll definitely get into just some of your thoughts on best practices and industry stuff later on, but in terms of your career leading up to Fund for Shared Insight, what would you say are some of those things that like prepared you for this role?
There were a variety of things. It's funny because I'm celebrating my 35th high school reunion this year, which seems like incredible. How can I possibly be out of high school for 35 years? But one of the things I find myself always doing, and this is true with Fund for Shared Insight, is we do a lot of events, whether it's webinars or in-person, when we could do it before COVID, dinners and things to engage funders in the work that we're doing. So my love for organizing events and my love for interacting with people of all different kinds has really served me well. Ironically, one of the jobs I had in college, which was transcribing legal depositions from tapes, using a foot pedal, like the first day of work, it took me 8 hours to do a 1 hour tape. And by the end of the summer, I could do it almost as it was going. That ability to type so fast and capture people's thoughts verbatim has been one of the skill sets that's really served me well, no matter what job I've had. So I can facilitate a meeting, take notes at the same time, and have like a transcript of what people have said by the end of the meeting.
That's brilliant. And I love how accomplished you are. Like, some of those things are just like critical skills that anybody can have. So I think it's really great to see that those initial skills have helped you all throughout your career as well. So I want to ask about, your career stuff before Fund for Shared Insight as well. And in terms of what you've been able to accomplish after graduating from Harvard and living in the San Francisco Bay Area and now in Philadelphia, if you could kind of highlight some of those key moments and accomplishments that you had, what would you like to share?
Sure, I think a few things. One is I've always been interested in starting up new organizations and programs. So even post-college, when I was doing management consulting and then working for a nonprofit, I helped co-found Boston Cares, which is part of the City Cares movement across the country to engage volunteers in the community. So that's been a really important thing to me, is being a part of connecting organizations with resources. That was before I even launched into my career in philanthropy. And then after business school, I helped start up in a very small way, just wrote the business plan for a tech company in San Francisco that had a mission about providing training and employment to folks in the tech industry, but also engaging community in the work that they're doing. And they're called Dayspring Partners. And again, right out of business school, I was given this amazing opportunity to co-found a social venture fund called Roberts Enterprise Development Fund, now known as REDF. And at the time, it was just based in the Bay Area. We were helping nonprofit-run small businesses employ formerly homeless and very low-income individuals and provide them with employment, training, social supports. And I love that work because it really brought in all the experience I'd had to date in terms of working with the homeless, my passion for that, my consulting background, organizing things, working with all different kinds of people. And it was really a privilege to do that work for the 7 years that I did when we were in San Francisco. And then fast forward, when my husband got a job at Penn Medical School, moved me to Philadelphia. My job at Rediff didn't move with me, but I decided to hang up a shingle and see if I could try consulting in philanthropy. And really just through networking and being in the right place at the right time, fell into a number of different opportunities working with some of the leading foundations in the country, and also with Goldman Sachs Philanthropy Fund that works with high net worth individuals, and just being a part of helping those organizations and individuals be more effective in their philanthropy. And I'm all about effectiveness, helping organizations and individuals sort of reach their potential and be more efficient, effective at what they do.
So definitely like community involvement and just like trying to influence the social good of things has been there throughout your career. But what was it that made you want to focus and shift to philanthropy as a career?
I really fell into philanthropy because when I was looking for a job out of business school, I was most passionate about working with homeless serving organizations that were doing innovative work in the San Francisco Bay Area because I knew I wanted to stay in San Francisco. And when this opportunity literally landed in my lap, one of the directors of the public management program at Stanford came running to me and said, "This is your job right here." And it met 24 of the 27 criteria I had for a job
post-graduate. I love that.
And it really was. It was working with 10 nonprofits that were working primarily with formerly homeless, formerly incarcerated individuals, low-income individuals. And I'd actually done informational interviews with 5 of the 10. So I didn't think about this social venture fund as philanthropy. It wasn't like I was looking for a job in philanthropy. I just fell into this opportunity that was about helping 10 nonprofits through financial resources, human resources, network capital. I mean, it was bringing that sort of approach that venture capitalists have to working with small and startup companies of not just money, but any other kind of resources you can bring to bear. So it's called high engagement philanthropy. And so that was really my introduction to philanthropy. I didn't know any better in terms of when I started to talk to foundation colleagues over that 7 year period of running Rediff, they talked about dockets and about grant proposals. Like, we didn't do that. We funded business plans. I had a checkbook that I could write checks out of from our donor. Someone's roof fell in or needed to be fixed, or the van needed to be repaired. I could just write a check for that. They didn't have to submit a proposal, then go through a letter of intent and like wait 6 months. So my introduction to philanthropy was through this lens of you do what you need to do out of the relationship you have with the nonprofits and an ongoing commitment to helping them be more sustainable and effective and meet the needs of the people that they're serving.
I think every nonprofit affiliated person listening to this right now is like, yes, 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 that's what we need.
And we did like we weren't even thinking like we're going to do multi-year, like large unrestricted grants. That's just what we did. Like, we had some organizations that we had funded for 14 years at the tune of several $100,000 a year.
Yeah. I think we're definitely seeing these trends in philanthropy becoming more commonplace now, especially with COVID-19. A lot of institutional funding went to general operating instead of programmatic support. And I think those are some of the shifts that we'll continue to see in the years to come, that more foundations will be just giving grants to operating support, that they won't have, asking you to fill out 50 different forms for things and follow-ups. It'll just be a simplified process. And like you said, trust-based, relationship-based. And, that's, I think, where the nonprofits will you know, maybe still have to fill out an LOI here or there, but once you find that go-to person, like that's the relationship you need to invest in to make your case.
Well, that is the hope. I mean, my hope is that the good practices that have been put in play during this, you know, unusual, challenging time, that foundations and donors won't go back to making things more difficult. So that is my hope.
Yeah. So let's get into Fund for Shared Insight. You know, you've been helping them out for several years. Can you share a little bit more about how and why it got started?
Sure. So back in 2013, I would say, the Hewlett Foundation out of California had a strategy around effective philanthropy that had ended. So they had some resources to bring to the sector, the philanthropic sector, with a mission to improve philanthropy. And at the time, Faye Torsky, who was the director of the Effective Philanthropy Group at Hewlett, basically went around the country and talked to a number of different funders and asked them, you know, given that we have this set of funds, how would you recommend we put them to play to improve philanthropy? And apparently at one of the meetings, Darren Walker, who had not yet been named the head of Ford, said to Faye, you know, you could do something just as Hewlett, but wouldn't it be better if we did something together? And so this idea of doing a funder collaborative, pooling funds with a number of other like-minded funders who really wanted to improve philanthropy was sort of brought into an existence at that point. And we started with 6 funders, then pretty soon 8 funders who each committed a minimum of $250,000 a year, general operating support, to this newly created pooled fund entity called Fund for Shared Insight. And we launched in July 2014. With a mission around improving philanthropy, and particularly by helping foundations and nonprofits meaningfully connect with each other. So, you know, those trust-based relationships, and that those relationships would also be made with the people and communities that funders and nonprofits that they ultimately seek to help, and to really elevate the voices of people who are benefiting from the services and programs that funders are funding nonprofits to deliver. Because in the sector to date, the voices of people who are using the services really hasn't come into the considerations of funders in terms of influencing funder strategy, funder grant making practices, certainly funder governance. And so we really are interested in seeing power shift from people and communities to the nonprofits and to funders, and all with a lens around equity. So really wanting to further equity and more equitable outcomes through the work that we do.
So in relation to equity, and I think just showcasing the many diverse communities in the U.S., when it comes to trying to get funding to more marginalized communities or communities of color, obviously, we had a big movement in social justice in 2020. Where do you see the opportunity for minority-based or minority-focused institutions to also seek more funding opportunities from mainstream philanthropy?
Well, I think it's more the responsibility of the funders to be doing the outreach. I mean, it's right. It's going to be hard.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really, the message really is to funders that they should be prioritizing organizations that are led by Black, Indigenous, and people of color, that serve BIPOC communities, and prioritizing those in their funding decisions. And part of it is, and it's about relationship, right? I mean, I've talked already about how my career path has been shaped by relationship, how our work at Fund for Shared Insight is about building connections. And yet we need to really be thoughtful and make significant efforts to reach beyond our usual networks and connections. Because if we are all on our just little silos, we're not going to be able to identify opportunities to fund or people who are doing good work in communities that we're not familiar with. So it's really all of us getting out of our comfort zone and being in community more significantly. And what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about our Listen for Good initiative, if that's—
Of course.
I mean, one of our signature initiative through Fund for Shared Insight for the past 5 years has been a program that we call Listen for Good. And it's something that we've developed in partnership with other funders, where funders have nominated organizations, direct service organizations around the US, to systematically have their capacity be built around how to listen well to the people they serve. And we have a whole team of feedback coaches that work one-on-one with organizations. It's been a matched funding program up until recently. We're in the midst of scaling our Listen for Good program, so it's more available. You don't have to have a funder in order to participate. That's been a bit of a barrier to date.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really is this opportunity for nonprofits to listen to the diverse voices of people they serve, to elevate those voices and have those considerations be taken into account in the nonprofit, to engage participants as partners in the work. And to date, we have more than 500 direct service nonprofits around the country that are doing this Listen for Good program with us. And a lot of them, a majority of them, are making changes to their programs based on what they hear from the people they seek to help. And power is shifting in some circumstances. We'd like to see more of that. And in some cases, the funders that are involved are also changing. We have 136 funders now to date that are involved with Fund for Shared Insight, primarily through our Listen for Good program. So we're doing our best to try to figure out ways to systematically elevate voices of people and communities, and particularly BIPOC communities going forward, and trying to figure out how to help funders understand how they can listen to those voices, act on what they hear, and change their grant making, their governance, their strategy development, to consider and incorporate the perspectives of people with the lived expertise.
So how long is this process typically?
Typically, a nonprofit that engages in Listen for Good, it's about an 18-month to 24-month process in terms of learning from our feedback coaches and from the peer community that we've created online. It's all virtual. We were very well set up once COVID hit because everything's virtual in our organization. But it takes about 18 to 24 months really to build that knowledge and the capacity to like design surveys well, to collect the data in equitable ways, to analyze the data, respond, and then close the loop with the people who have given you the feedback, and then continue that sort of virtuous cycle of feedback.
Yeah, and what have some of the learnings or implementations that organizations have done from the Listen for Good campaign?
There are a lot of different organizations that have made changes. And you could say some of them are small changes, some of them are large, but really if you think about it from the perspective of the people experiencing the services, even what we might consider a small change can be quite significant. In some cases, it's been food banks where people have said, I stand outside and there's nowhere to sit while I'm waiting and it's really hot or I'm being rained or snowed on. So could you please put in benches, build an awning so that we can have some more dignity in terms of when we're waiting. There have been some organizations where they've completely redesigned the way that people come into their organization. One organization, people were waiting 4 to 6 hours to be seen. And then if they got to the front of the line and didn't have all their paperwork, they were sent home and they had to come back another day. Like, that is so disrespectful and so inefficient. And so through the feedback, they heard very clearly, like, we need to do a process redesign of how we do intake with our clients. Other organizations have found disparities, many, like a majority of the organizations, because with Listen for Good, they not only ask questions, but they also ask some demographic questions about race, ethnicity, age, and gender. And that allows organizations to then disaggregate the feedback findings by those different demographics. And more often than not, they find disparities in people's experience by one or more of those demographics. And then they can drill down and see, like, why is it that the Vietnamese older population that's coming to our organization is having a much worse experience than the Latino clients that are coming? Or why is it that the African-American youth that are participating in an after-school program are having a very different experience than the white students? Now, some of this is not surprising that there should be these disparities, but for organizations, it's very helpful to see that in the data, so they can then share that data with their staff, make sense of it, ideally engage the people who gave the feedback in helping them interpret the data and come up with solutions. What are we going to do about this disparity in people's experience in the after-school program or, you know, at the food bank in terms of people's lived experience with the programs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for an organization, understanding that there's always going to be blind spots and there's always going to be opportunity to improve and reiterate. And from what it sounds like, you know, organizations can inquire with Fund for Shared Insight to be part of this Listen for Good campaign. Fund for Shared Insight provides like a lead person for them to be like a point of contact and walk them through this process and building these focus groups and surveys and everything involved. And then once your constituents from your nonprofit participate, then that data is shared with the organization. And, you know, because I feel like a lot of the times if institutions try to do this on their own, a lot of stuff will fall through the cracks. But having like an accountability partner that Fund for Shared Insight and the Listen for Good team is engaging with the nonprofit every step of the way, it helps with that accountability and implementation. Is that correct to say?
Yeah, it's mostly correct in that we do have these feedback coaches that do coach the organizations around every step. But I should clarify that the organizations own the data themselves. It's not like Shared Insight owns the data. It's all in SurveyMonkey. We've done this in partnership with SurveyMonkey because so many nonprofits already know how to use SurveyMonkey. And so all that data that's collected ultimately ends up in SurveyMonkey. And we coach the organizations on how do you then analyze that data that you have in SurveyMonkey? How do you respond to it? How do you close the loop with people who've given the feedback? And so the organization's capacity is built over time to do this themselves. So they're not having to rely on a third-party consultant to help them figure this out. The coaches really work with organizations on building this ability within the organization itself. So the organization can be stronger in its ability to understand the services it's providing and the feedback people are providing on those services.
Mm-hmm. And then what is the fee based on, like, the budget of the organization? How does that tend to work?
So going forward from 2021 forward, we have two different product offerings through Listen for Good. One is Listen for Good Online Plus, and that's $1,000 that a nonprofit can pay themselves to use the product. And it's really not a product, it's like a program. Or they can have a funder. We are encouraging funders to just like buy this for their grantee partners. There's a second offering, which is called Listen for Good Premium, and that just comes with more coaching hours. So everyone has access to the survey instrument, to some fundamental coaching around how to set things up, the online community. There's a whole web app that's incredibly robust with testimonials and videos and examples, sample questions that organizations have used. All of those are available to both the Online Plus and the Premium customers. But Premium would give you more access to more coaching. And that's $6,000 for an organization to participate.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of other programs and services at Fund for Shared Insight, you know, in terms of benefits to other nonprofits, like what are some things that they can expect from Fund for Shared Insight?
Beyond the Listen for Good program?
Right.
Yeah, so beyond Listen for Good, which is its own sort of entity and has a huge engine that's running it, we have a variety of other areas that we are funding in and learning in. One is around participatory grant making. So we're just starting to experiment with what it means to engage people who are most affected by climate change to be involved with making the funding decisions around where funds should go to address climate justice. So that's a new area that we're working. We're also looking at international grant making. There's a lot of interest in Asia, in Israel, other parts of the country, other parts of the world in the work that we're doing, whether it's replicating Fund for Shared Insight itself or bringing Listen for Good to those different areas. And we also have a whole body of feedback research looking at the question of, is there a relationship between feedback that someone gives today and the outcomes for that individual like 2 years down the road? So we have a small portfolio of organizations that are looking at whether there is a relationship between feedback and outcomes. And then we have a whole community of practice of philanthropy serving organizations that are trying to develop tools and other resources for funders to help funders listen And as I mentioned, you know, bring the voices of those people and communities they seek to help into the deliberations for grant making, for strategy development, for governance. So that's a whole nother body of work that we're funding and supporting. And I should mention too, there are 10 what are called core funders that pooled their funds together for Fund for Shared Insight. Mm-hmm. And that group of 10 funders are also reflecting on the work themselves. So it's not just these funders telling other funders what to do, but we call it walking the walk, that the funders themselves are looking at their own practices and how they can also listen to people in communities, bring an equity lens into what they do. So those are a variety of different ways that we are living out our theory of change, which can be found on our website. I should mention there are also like dozens of stories about how nonprofits have changed, how funders have changed. There's like 7 or 8 videos, maybe even a dozen videos that we have that feature organizations and how they're changing. So all of that's on our website, as well as all the evaluations we've done of our work to date.
Fantastic. And the URL is fundforsharedinsight.org. You can find Fund for Shared Insight on Twitter at @4 Shared Insight. Melinda, is there anything else that you'd like to share on behalf of Fund for Shared Insight, or just even, you know, advice that you have to people that want to be consultants like yourself, advice for people who are looking to get into philanthropy, or just general trends in philanthropy that you've seen?
Well, I think first and foremost, given the audience that you have, is that, you know, we would love to see more nonprofits that are serving Muslim populations led by Muslim individuals to be involved in our work. I mean, I would say, as I think about my personal network, that is not part of my natural network. And so I am eager to see our work mm-hmm. expand to the community that you are addressing. And so I'm so very appreciative of this opportunity to address your audience in that respect. In terms of advice about becoming a consultant philanthropy, I mean, I just sort of fell into it. And I always advise folks who are interested just to see, is it something that you're interested in doing? Is it something you're passionate about doing? Can you be clear about the criteria for why you'd want to do this kind of work? And in terms of if there are any funders listening, I would encourage funders, you know, to do the right practices around general operating support, multi-year support, trust-based philanthropy, building relationships with nonprofits, and have that practice continue post-COVID, and that this would really be the new normal for the how funders relate to nonprofits going forward.
Yeah, this has been super insightful. I'm so glad that we had an opportunity to chat even further today, and looking forward to staying in touch and seeing all the great work that Fund for Shared Insight does. Everybody should check out the Listen for Good campaign. Again, their website is fundforsharedinsight.org. Melinda, thank you so much for being on our podcast today.
Such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Marie.
Likewise.